This is the DRF Players Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the September 2nd edition of the DRF Players Podcast. And then there were four as we sit here Friday morning in the kitchen on the little house by the east side. You try to be an optimist and say 4 days out of 40, that's 10%. 10% is still kind of a lot, but in your heart, you know it's not. The meat on the wane, but we still have a show for you today that will hopefully give you some ideas on some ways to make some money for that final 10% of the Saratoga meat. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornital, back with you, joined by the usual crew from the DRF offices in Manhattan. It's Mike Hogan.
Hello, Pete.
And joining us from an undisclosed location deep in the heart of Texas, last year's NHC Tour champion, Jonathan Kinchin.
Drinking lots of water. My brother, the DJ, is in town. He's got a show tonight. So assuming I'm going to need some hydration.
Probably wise. Your clean living plan goes out the window when that guy comes into town, I would imagine.
Absolutely. There's no doubt about that.
We are going to be joined in a little bit by our friend Pat Cummings to talk about this very exciting partnership that was just announced this week between Daily Racing Form and the Hong Kong Jockey Club. Before we get to that, we have some races to cover. Before we get into the specifics of the races that we want to talk about this week, anything else we want to table for discussion, gentlemen? I'm sort of giving you the chance to do the final thought first. But turning the show on its head, knowing we have Pat Cummings coming in and assuming we're going to be getting all the dope from him about how to suss out this Hong Kong form. Jonathan, anything, thoughts on the, since the last time we spoke?
Yeah, you came up with a pretty good idea and launched something that's pretty exciting on the DRF Tournament's Twitter account, where every day it looks like you're going to get a special somebody to talk a little bit about one of the races that's in the tournament sequence. So, if you don't already follow that Twitter account, it's probably definitely worth it and something you want to look at moving forward, just with at least one good angle or one play a day. And even if it's a play you don't like, it's sometimes it can, you know, with these shows and podcasts and Steve Bick's radio show, one of the things that I picked up at the very beginning is if you can grab one little nugget that you can learn to use later, even if it doesn't apply to what you're doing today, it's worth it. So, I think that's pretty cool. I'm excited to watch all of those videos that you're going to be doing on tournament day. So keep up the good work.
Well, you know, I do occasionally come up with some halfway decent ideas. And I do have to say, I think this is one of them. The DRF Tournament's Twitter feed is a house feed. I don't run it personally. We have a lot of people involved. But it's going to be fun hearing guests such as the three people on this podcast right now, all offering suggestions of potential plays in the DRF Tournament sequence. Don't forget, also, the DRF Tournament's feed gives you a chance to win your way into contests for nothing. Some free roll opportunities. There's one this week that I believe got launched where folks can win their way into the Santa Anita qualifier this weekend. Is that right, Jonathan? Sounds like you've been on there more than me.
No, I know that you, I don't know if it, I haven't seen that. But I know that you had mentioned you were thinking about doing something, trying to get them to do so. I guess we'll have to figure that out.
If not this week, in short order, there's an opportunity to win great stuff and also listen to tips from the likes of Mike Hogan, Jonathan Kinchin, and Peter Thomas Fornital on there. Jonathan, how did your initial tip go? You were carefully chosen as the one to kick off the whole deal. Did you give the folks a winner?
Oh, I think if they bet the show, I gave out a winner. I think he's still running. He broke slow and was way back, and yeah, you know, the same old jazz.
But, I've heard that story before.
But like I said, I mean, the point that I made was a point that can find you a winner. A horse that was traveling on the poor side, on the poor part of the track, and was first off of a claim for a trainer who will move a horse up, you know. He was a third choice. There was a gate scratch that kind of caused the price to drop a little bit, but, you know, no biggie. Next time we'll get him.
Mike Hogan, how about you? Anything you want to discuss before we get into the specifics of these four races today?
Well, I'll be doing one of those play of the day videos for Sunday, so keep an eye out for that. I'm still trying to figure out my play, and hopefully I'll come up with something interesting and valuable. But the only other thing I'll mention before we dive in is in regards to Twitter, I actually created I came out on Twitter from behind the DRF formulator.
Does your wife
Twitter
know,
feed.
Mike? Does your
you know, I don't know. It's kind of a personal question.
Sorry, Pete. I'll let you continue.
So, you know, still running the DRF Formulator Twitter feed, obviously posting a lot of stuff on there, got a lot of followers on there. That's not going away anytime soon. But I created DRF Hogan to do just a little bit more of, you know, my personality on Twitter. I can't necessarily get as much into discussions about things on a corporate account, and not, you know, not that I'm going to go crazy, but just felt like there was a time and a place to give a little bit more personality and a little more opinion than what I had been doing on DRF Formula. Kind of like on the podcast, you know, if I'll come out and say, you know, I think that this is blah, blah, blah. You know, I don't want it to necessarily, I want it to be my opinion, not necessarily one that represents all of the daily racing form.
That makes sense. I mean, as a marketer, you have to keep in mind who's writing your paycheck and what sort of a face you're showing to the world. And when it's your name, even though it has the DRF letters in there, it gives you a chance to take the gloves off a bit more, I think, when talking about some of the issues of the day. So everybody who already follows at DRF Formulator, I'm going to have to start remembering this in my intros for stuff we do, I should say. I mean, is the right thing to do to give both handles at this point, at DRF Hogan and at DRF Formulator?
I guess so. I mean, you know, certainly there's much more equity in the DRF Formulator one, and it's not going away. But, you know, it's like sometimes people will say, like, hey, you know, at DRF Formula, how do you use whatever, Tomlinson's? And as a corporate account, I'm not going to say, you know, I usually don't factor them in, you know, right. like personally, I will come out with a little bit more opinion like that. Like you said, Pete, you know, I'm not going to, like, you know, there's the certain products that I don't use, but I still promote, and, you know, that's appropriate. So
I just want to know if you're going to drop an F bomb on your personal Twitter.
Oh, I don't know, John. I guess you'll just have to follow and find out.
Wait till you see at DRF Hogan, the red fox of horse racing Twitter. Get ready for that one. He works blue, folks. Don't be fooled. For me, the only things I wanted to mention, I'm also going to be a guest in addition to doing the podcast today, obviously. Going to be a guest a little bit later today with Matt Bernier on the Matt Bernier Show, reviewing some of the events of Saratoga, talking a little bit about these stakes. Encourage everybody who regularly downloads and listens to the DRF Players podcast to check out the Matt Bernier Show. Matt, obviously one of the folks who helped launch this podcast in the first place. He takes a slightly different take on things on his show. And I think there's room in your iTunes, your SoundCloud, your, you know, you name it, however you consume your podcast, for both shows, and encourage folks to check that out for sure. I will be doing one of those at DRF tournaments videos later today. First thing I got to do, though, is actually crack the racing form and look at the card. So that'll be one of the three other deadlines I have today once we're done here. And the next confession to make is, and you could probably already guess this, if I haven't looked at today, you could probably surmise correctly that I haven't looked at tomorrow. Fortunately, we do have, I don't like the idea of taking off a show, especially as important a one as at the end of the Saratoga meet. So today, hopefully, Jonathan and Mike will have plenty of thoughts on the four public handicapper races, and I say we segue directly to those. We've got one from Saratoga, and then we've got this chaotic and fascinating Kentucky Downs card. Personally, I don't know. Am I in the minority here? I kind of wish the Kentucky Downs was just moved out like one weekend from Saratoga. Having it all go on at the same time, for me personally, makes it a little bit harder to follow. Do you guys find that, or are you just as happy having it, having sort of this signature fall-type meet happening at the same time as the summer meets are still going on? Jonathan, I'll ask you that question.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it makes a little bit more sense for them just to, you know, maybe just wait a second, but I'm sure there's a lot of situations that have kind of made it fall where it falls here. So, you know, it's still fun racing. I know a lot of people get excited about it. Our friend and podcast listener, Jack Jenkins, this is literally his Christmas. Like, he gets, I mean, he's been littering our group text with Kentucky down stats. He's so fired up. So if you have any need for thoughts about that, shoot him on a note on Twitter. He gears up for Kentucky down. So
Jack can be found at @voljack, and perhaps that's an excuse to have him on. I promise not to entirely hijack the conversation to talk about the things we cook on our green eggs. Mike Hogan, how about you? Does the timing of this weekend with the Kentucky Downs races, does it affect how likely you are to play them?
Not really. I mean, I get the point. Like, it would be more ideal if it started a week later after Saratoga wrapped. But, you know, like Jonathan was saying, I think it's kind of out of their control a little bit, and they get the dates that they're given.
Great
point. I mean, in a perfect world, you know, you're right, but I'm kind of more with Jack on this. Like, I love the Kentucky Downs meet. You get full fields, you get low takeouts, you get really good horses coming from all different circuits. You get just a fascinating course layout. I mean, it's unlike anything we see in North America. And it's, you know, 5 race days of really, really, really good turf racing. I love it.
Great. All right. Well, let's actually do this in a different order than I was originally going to. I was going to start with the Glen Falls at Saratoga, but let's put a pin in that and come back to it. And we don't have as much time to talk about these races as we normally do. I do want to make sure that we have enough time with Pat, who I think we'll bring on in about 23 minutes. So that gives us, we don't have to rush through these, but, you know, we just have to keep that in mind a little bit. And let's start with the 8th race on Saturday at Kentucky Downs. It's the juvenile. It goes 7 furlongs on the turf. Mike Hogan, let's change things up and start with you today. Do you have anything exciting for us in the Kentucky Downs juvenile?
I do. You know, and one of the things I like about Kentucky Downs is you get horses coming from all over, and you get a lot of horses, especially these younger ones, that aren't really experienced much at all, especially on turf. And some of the morning line favorites, including number 3, Han Sense, a Hanson colt, 7-2 on the morning line for Mike Maker, has never tried turf before and is not really bred for it. And so you have to ask yourself, you know, what kind of price do you want to take on these horses that may be talented but aren't necessarily bred and certainly don't have experience on the circuit, so, or on the surface, rather. So that's why I like these races. You get good prices on ones that are bred well and doing exactly what they want. There's a couple that jumped out at me. Number 6, Parlor for Eddie Keneally. Fantastic debut at Ellis Park. Broke slowly, really slowly, slower than it looks in the running line. If you watch the replay, it was almost left at the gate. And then won like a really good thing. I mean, just crushed that field. I don't know what he beat at Ellis Park, but is bred for the turf. You know, Lonro out of a mare who produced a decent turf runner. I love him at 10-1. The other one that's intriguing to me for Mike Stidham and Godolphin Racing. Mike Stidham is now training for Godolphin, so that's an interesting pairing. Number 2, Zanino, debuted like a good thing. It was, I thought, much the best, even though he dead heated, got a little bit of contact. They actually took down the horse he dead heated with, so he got the win all by himself in his debut at Arlington, going shorter, stretches out a little bit, went wide on the turn, and the dam. So he's the first foal out of this dam, I believe, but the dam is a half to Spitestown. So even though she's by Bernardini, there's a lot of turf pedigree there, and should be a very, very interesting interesting race. So those are the two I'd take a stand with.
Possible speed and precocity courtesy of that Spitestown blood as well. And one note I'll just add on Parlor that you mentioned, who you mentioned, Mike, is that did not look like a case of sometimes these horses get left and it's a crazy pace, and getting left actually ends up being something that can almost help a horse, or can actually help a horse. Doesn't look like that's the case with Parlor. Just looking at the relationship between those fractions in that race, looks to me like he overcame a lack of pace to go ahead and win impressively from way back there.
Yeah.
Seems like an interesting idea. I might just follow you in on number 6, Parlor. JK, were your thoughts on the juvenile?
One last thing on Parlor. He came home in 23 flat. You don't see that with 2-year-olds very often.
Yeah, not bad at all. JK, where are you here?
Yeah, I mean, I can't disagree with you on Parlor. Unfortunately, it doesn't feel like 10-1 is going to be what we're going to get. You know, I guess the other angle of a horse that I would be interested in playing here is the 8 Hot Dad. I mean, like I've talked about it before, how much I respect Mike Maker as a trainer and his capabilities of getting a horse to do anything, and especially run on turf. This horse is a foal to Converge, who's a graded stakes winner in Chad Brown's barn. I'm a Sydney's Candy fan through and through. I was at Windstar doing a tour of like all the horses, and we're bringing out, you know, Tis Now, and I'm like, can I see Sydney's Candy? We had to go to this little back barn to see him, but you know, I just think the horse makes sense. He got a good figure in Indiana, and like I said, when Mike Maker runs him, I pay attention, and this horse has a right to be a good one.
Sydney's Candy, important enough in your life, Jonathan, that you named an apartment complex after him, if I'm not mistaken.
We did, yeah. My buddy Robert Chow and I, our first apartment complex deal that we got here in Austin, we named it the Sydney. So, and we painted the laundry room to look like his silk.
Nice,
fantastic. So,
nice. Let's move on. You know, Sydney's my dog's name too. So you know, it's close to my heart as well.
Not not because of Sydney's Candy though, right? Sydney predates Sydney's Candy.
Sydney does predate Sydney's Candy, but when Sydney's Candy came on the scene, you know, I kind of couldn't help but root for him.
Instant affinity. Let's move on to the Kentucky Downs Turf Sprint. Jonathan, on this one, we'll start with you.
Yeah, you know, this is one of those races where when I looked at it, I thought to myself, like, okay, what can I find clever here? And then you see a horse in here that's entered that you said, if this horse does this, he won't lose. And I texted someone after Undrafted's last race and said, if he could always run at 6.5 furlongs, he'd never lose. And so I can't do anything but pick him here. I mean, it makes no sense for me to try to go elsewhere. I think he's one of the most talented turf sprinters we have. I think that the 5 and the 5.5 are a little bit too sharp for him. The 6 isn't very common, and the 7's not very common. It only happens at Belmont. So I think that he's probably going to be the most likely winner. I know he's not the sexiest of prices, and you can look elsewhere, but I can't in my right mind give you someone else when I thought the horse wouldn't lose going 6.5 ever again. So
another point to make about the Kentucky Downs configuration, like a lot of European configurations, it plays longer than the stated distance because of the uphill finish and the way that the turn works. It plays into sort of galloping types, and that would seem to suit him, for whom the 5.5 at Saratoga did seem a little bit sharp last time. Mike Hogan, where did you go in here?
You know, Undrafted makes a lot of sense. You know, and look, I wouldn't want to not use him in any sort of multi-race wagers. But, you know, Jonathan mentioned he's going to take a lot of money. He doesn't always win. Granted, I agree this distance is probably better suited for him. But, you know, look, he lost at Kentucky Downs at this distance before as a favorite. So, you know, I could see the case against him here. And I'm you know, I don't have any crazy prices. I think the two most likely upsetters are the 7 and the 8, they're 9-2 and 4-1, respectively. Too Windy to Haul Rocks for Phil D'Amato. This is another one, I think, to Jonathan's point, 6.5 is the perfect distance for him. You know, he's won down the hill. I think he should like the configuration at Kentucky Downs. I think a mile's a little long, and right now at Del Mar, you know, the 5 is maybe a little sharp for him. So I think the distance is perfect. The other one I really like is Regally Ready, who's a horse that's just at 9 now, just always runs his race. You know, I think he's actually, I think Steve Asmussen has kind of figured out what works for him. I think he's a horse that needs a little bit of time off and runs better off a bit of a layoff. He seems to be working really well, and he's won before it at Kentucky Downs. So, he's probably the one I'd lean on most heavily in here.
Good thoughts. Let's move it on to the 10th race at Kentucky Downs. It's the Kentucky Downs Juvenile Fillies, $350,000 purse, going 7 furlongs. Mike, we'll keep it with you. And I'm not going to be mean and ask you to pronounce the name of the number one horse in here.
You know, I went back and forth on that a little bit, and I actually watched the replay to try and see if the announcer could give me a hint. He called him Zizix, which doesn't seem right. It seems like
Zixes. I was going to go Zixes.
Right, Zixes. Yeah. Zixes. It's Zixes. You know, so I left it with Zixes. you know, this is a really interesting race here, because there's a horse in this race, or a filly, I should say, in this race, that it just appears to be the best in here. That's number six, Lull. I was singled to this horse in the Bolton Landing. I thought that she probably would not lose that race until what happened, which, if you watch the replay, she's tipping out at the top of the stretch. Manny Franco is ready to make his move on the turn, and I think just runs into the horse in front of her, goes down. It was a really heavy, hard fall. She hit the ground hard. She's worked since then, but that's the kind of horse that I hate to play at a short price. You know, a fall can, especially with a young horse, can really cause a lot of things, just mentally. So I don't know if I want to take a stand on her. She can win if she runs a race, but there's just too many questions for me around her. I'm going to go with number seven, Caroline Test, for Ben Colebrook. Gets Florent Giroux aboard. Hasn't run on turf before, but is absolutely bred to run on turf. The dam is a half to Sky Treasure and Surgical Strike, both of whom not only are nice turf horses, both of whom actually won at Kentucky Downs last meet. So, you know, it's a strange configuration. Not all horses like it. This one is related to a couple that have done good work at Kentucky Downs. I think she's got some good speed. She could be controlling speed in here, and she seems to be coming into the race very nicely.
JK?
And Micah Maker, we trust. you know, this is more of a trip play with the three Lady Hansen. You know, the horse missed the break last time. I thought it was, you know, missed, maybe cost him five lengths. Still got up to win. We have a trip note that it looks like it might be a habit. So hopefully they can get that, whatever that gate situation, corrected. If you notice, the last work was from the gate. So obviously Mike Maker is aware of it and trying to get it sorted out. If the horse breaks well or breaks with the field, it feels like the horse is the most likely winner in here at what appears to be a pretty good price. So Lady Hansen for me, that's where I would lean.
Excellent. Yeah, but taking a lot of money those two times, and a lot of trainers I wouldn't trust to be able to get a horse like that turned around. That can really become a habit with horses, and even when the breaks aren't so bad as to be noted by every chart caller, they will still cost you a little bit. But I do agree, Maker's maybe the kind of trainer where we can say, hey, let's see if this can get figured out. And again, that seven that plays almost more like a mile in my imagination anyway, maybe not nearly as bad to have a horse who breaks like that than, say, a sharp five. So makes a lot of sense, JK. Let's move it on to Saratoga. We're going to do two races from Saratoga in addition to the Glens Falls, which is our fourth and final publichandicapper.com race. We're going to take a look at the Woodward, obviously. Jonathan, we'll start with you and the Glens Falls at Saratoga. How are we going to make money in here?
I'm just for clarification, I'm pretty sure that it's the 10th that we're supposed to do but let's do them both. I mean, whatever. I mean,
I think it's the Glens
Falls. It's definitely the Glens Falls. I was just reading it out of the email.
Yeah. Oh, the email says the 10th race, but let's do it. I like them both.
Oh, no, I'm looking at the marketing email they sent out, not the little private email that we get ahead of time. If you haven't looked at it, JK, no need to fake it.
No, I did.
Okay,
you
great.
Know how I am. My motto. If there's a horse running in a circle or a semicircle, I'm interested. You can put seven people out there to run in a circle, and if they'll take wagers on it, I bet it.
Olympic wagering, the future of New Jersey. Never mind. All right, who do you like in this Glens Falls?
You know, someone pointed out, and I wish I could give them credit who it was, but someone said towards the end of this meet. Oh, I think it might have been Paul Matisse. Be aware that Chad and Todd are going to start doing things that they don't do well to try to get in this title situation under control. And you see Todd's got two in here. He's trying. I mean, those are both good horses. It's only Acting Dad and Photo Call. But when it comes to these situations, I'm going to lean on Chad when they're going on the grass, long on the grass. And I can't pronounce it, but this three horse. Guapaza. Looks a little bit tough.
Yeah.
There we go, Guapaza. You know, it's one of those things where it's not sexy. It's not a great price. It's none of those things. But Chad seems to find that wire when they're on the grass more than anyone else. And in these situations, I'm fine with that rather than reaching for something that doesn't make nearly as much sense. So for me, it's Guapaza.
After a few weeks ago when Jonathan in consecutive weeks picked the $100 horses on the podcast, more than one person gave me a hard time for calling him so consistently a chalk-sucking weasel. But those same folks now can at least see where I was coming from, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Mike,
what
did you come up with in here?
You know, Guapaza fits. Look, she's probably going to be a short price favorite in here. But, you know, I don't love her. She was kind of all out to beat Suffused, holding on at the wire there. Suffused maybe isn't the best turf filly we've got in the country. So I'm hoping that that's a sign that that race maybe wasn't as strong as some of the others. I've liked It's Only Acting Dad since her debut, actually. I picked her in the matchmaker last out. She ran like a good thing. Granted, she was favored there, but she was much the best. She's going to be a better price in here, and I think she's as good, if not better even, than Guapaza in this race. She'll get a good trip. There should be some decent pace in here with Photo Call acting, I guess, even as the rabbit to an extent. I don't think that's explicitly the directions, but she's the one that's going to be setting the pace and help assure a pace for It's Only Acting Dad. So for me, It's Only Acting Dad's the most likely winner. The one that I find interesting, though, at a price is Modern Stone. For making first start for Christophe Clement, was bought not privately, at auction at Keeneland November by Bobby Flay for $350,000 as a racing and broodmare prospect. Was laid off since, seems to be working okay, and Christophe does very, very well with these long layoffs in spots like this, and wouldn't be surprised if she improves and runs even one of her best races as a six-year-old.
All right, so that's race 11 at Saratoga on Saturday. Let's rewind one race and talk about race 10, the Grade 1 Woodward. Mike, we'll keep it with you.
Cold Kieran McLaughlin Exacta, book it. In fact, box it, because at the price, I can actually make a case that Mubtaij might actually beat Frosted here. I think it's much likely that Frosted beats Mubtaij. So if you want to play it more heavily that way over the other, feel free. But I can see the case for Mubtaij making a move forward. Look, he's a horse I've never really liked all that much. And he seemingly has been overbet in every one of his starts in North America. But now he's making his second start for Kieran. He was completely against the pace scenario. FNX and Samra just went 1-2 all the way around in the Suburban. He's going to get a little bit better of a pace scenario. If he takes a step forward from that race, it's not crazy to think that he can turn the tables on Frosted, because he ran much better than Frosted in the Dubai World Cup. So there, right there, at the price that you're likely to get, you know, I think Frosted obviously is your big favorite, your most likely winner, but crazier things than have happened than Mubtaij perhaps beating him.
Mike Hogan taking a page out of Jonathan's Kinchin Chronicles, giving out the $4 exacta there. Jonathan,
yes.
do you just want to second that emotion, or do you have anything clever to say in this race?
Yeah, no, I think he's going to lose.
Frosted?
I do.
Let's hear it.
I think that you know, what happened last time was he kind of inherited that lead and went to the front, and they kind of used him early in that race, and now, because it made sense there, now he's having to do something that he's going to have to rate off of Braidster. Braidster's drawn outside of him. He's going to get some weird trip where Braidster kind of clears him. He's going to get kind of in this weird spot. He's going to eat dirt. I actually don't like the horse at all, to be honest with you.
So where do we go to beat him?
I'm going to go to the rail with Shaman Ghost. I mean, Mubtaij makes a lot of sense. I have no idea why Arad dropped that horse to the rail last time when the rail just wasn't good that day. And he looked like he was going to run by in the Suburban. Then he drops him to the rail and he kind of spins his wheels. So Mubtaij is fine with me if that's where you wanted to go. I'm going to go with Shaman Ghost. I thought he had a little bit of a weird trip on that same track that wasn't really – the inside isn't where you wanted to be. He was down in there, buried all the entire way around there. His Brooklyn was super impressive. Maybe he wants longer, but with Javier aboard, I think Javier will put him in the race, and he's one that I would definitely want to use in this spot at what I would imagine is going to be a really good price, maybe even higher than that 12-1. With the money that you would imagine Frosted and Mukhtarjee are going to take. So Shaman goes for me. Obviously, Frosted is the most likely winner, but I feel like he's going to get a weird trip, and I feel like this is the type of spot you want to play against him.
All right, now we are going to bring in, as promised, our special guest. He is the executive manager of public affairs for the Hong Kong Jockey Club. He's Pat Cummings. Pat, how are you doing today?
Hi, Pete. Fantastic here in Hong Kong.
Excellent. You're 12 hours ahead of us. So while it's just morning here in Saratoga, we appreciate you taking a little bit of late night time to come on and discuss this exciting partnership between DRF and the Hong Kong Jockey Club. My first question for you is an absolute softball. For folks who haven't heard, why don't you tell them what's going on in terms of this partnership?
Well, it's certainly high time that the information that's provided by the Hong Kong Jockey Club appear in the pages of the esteemed turf authority, if you will, at least when it comes to information in North America. And it's really exciting to have the Delhi Racing Forum and the club together for this. So past performances will be available online. And, you know, for people that don't necessarily know, we do put a separate version of past performances online at the Hong Kong Jockey Club's website if people wanted to learn a new way to do it. But you really don't have to. We have more American-style past performances that will appear for free at DRF.com, and it will also appear in the many of the PM editions of the Daily Racing Form in the print version as well. And racing here in Hong Kong pretty much happens in Hong Kong time, Saturday or Sunday afternoon, and then Wednesday evening, which for those on the East Coast is typically late night, Saturday night into Sunday morning, or Friday night into Saturday, depending on which day of the weekend, and very early Wednesday morning. So what players are going to enjoy is the ability to get into what are the world's largest per race tote pools. And that's not an understatement. On average, I think our total handle per day is roughly 130, 140 million U.S. We average about 17 million U.S. per race. And you want to have a nice bet, you're not going to move the pools. I can assure you of that.
So, Pat, why don't you talk a little bit about the types of wagers available, the field sizes, some of the reasons why American players and North American players that might not be so familiar with Hong Kong, aside from the pools, why might they need to start paying attention?
Well, you know, we don't have a whole lot of American horses here. There are a handful of them, and there's actually one American bred horse I kind of like on tomorrow's card, Saturday's card. We'll get into that later, I suppose. But it's all tote, so there is a familiarity there. The bets are win in place. There is no show wagering. If you bet a horse to place, it's to finish first, second, or third. We don't have an exacta. We have a quinella, an incredibly popular pool, averaging, you know, roughly probably $2-3 million U.S. in that pool per race. It's ridiculous, actually. Wow. In some cases, even higher. Honest with you, as you get later in the card and the pools really really crack up. But that's, you know, picking a horse to run in the first two in either order. There's another bet that we have that's called Quinella Place. It was also in some places known as the Swinger. There have been some kind of test trial runs with it in the U.S. known as Omni. You can call it a couple different things, but what it means is you need two horses to run in the first three. So you have that, and then we have the trifecta, which for us is called the tierce. That's getting the trifecta in order. And then another bet's called the trio, which is the first three in any order. So it's essentially serves as a box. Those are the main bets that are available in the tote pools through DRF bets, through a whole bunch of other ADWs. So, I mean, there's just a lot of ways that you can get involved. And frankly, as the tote protocol improves over time, there's hope that we'll be able to offer some more bets into the commingled pools, because we have some really great ones that are really fun. The six up, which you unfortunately can't get into, but the last six races of the day, you have to pick a horse to run first or second in all six races. And if you get all six, there's a win bonus on top of that. And you can get in for a really low minimum, which makes it fun. And then we have a triple trio, which is essentially picking the first three horses in three consecutive races, but they're boxed tries. So those are types of bets what we hope to be able to offer later on as the tote protocol advances between us.
Pat, hey, how you doing, Jonathan? You know, I've always been interested. You know, our friend Eric Bylett came over and hung out in Hong Kong and came back raving about how much he loved it. Now we're dirt and turf, correct?
Yeah, about 85% of our races are on grass. Only about 10 to 15% on dirt. Our meeting that starts tomorrow, which will be roughly a 1 a.m. Eastern time start, 10 p.m. Pacific. It's basically all turf. It's our first day of the season, so we're running only between 1,000 meters, roughly 5 furlongs, and 1,400 meters, 7 furlongs. But it's almost exclusively turf racing, and it's almost exclusively all handicaps. So you really kind of have to factor in weight, because the average race here, the top weight's 133 pounds, the bottom weight is 113 pounds, and sometimes you get these claiming apprentices that can claim anywhere from 2 to 10 pounds, and you can have some horses that get in carrying 103, 104.
That's amazing. I want to ask about the difference in studying the form. It almost sounds to me like a hybrid of how one studies the form of American racing and UK racing. I know you have a lot of experience looking at UK form as well, Pat. How would you describe where studying Hong Kong fits in that sort of continuum between the USA approach and the UK approach? And talk a little bit generally, if you don't mind, about what the fundamental factors are that we're going to need when we're looking at these DRFPPs for Hong Kong races.
I think the problem that most Americans encounter when they're looking at form overseas is not understanding how the races are going to be run. They don't necessarily see in running positions. You will see that in the Hong Kong form. So that takes away that lack of familiarity. Also, all of our races are run on essentially a U.S. style paperclip track. They go in the opposite direction, but everything's run on an oval. We do have a straight 5 furlong run, which is fun and exciting, but that's only really for our 1,000 meter turf races. But you get a familiar product that I think is very engaging. The races are very close, and American handicappers aren't used to looking at weight and to understand the differences between. They most times we don't even look at it, let's be honest, guys.
Sure.
But there's a horse in our fifth race tomorrow, essentially tonight for the listeners here. Number one, Run Forest. He carried 114 pounds in his last start in what was a Class 3 handicap. His rating fell. He's now on a Class 4 handicap and is going to carry top weight of 133 pounds. So is he getting into an easier race? Technically, yes. The handicaps are rated classes 1 through 5. 1 is the highest, 5 is the lowest. And every horse in Hong Kong gets a numerical rating. That rating determines what class of handicap you can get into. So when a horse is dropping from class 3 to class 4, that is essentially getting easier in grade. However, they're going to carry significantly more weight than what they did before. The other difference is that relative to a lot of other international racing, we have a lot of pace in our turf races. Our average field size last year at Sha Tin was about 13 horses per race on the grass, and at Happy Valley it's about 11.7 horses per race. Now, they can only hold 14 and 12 horses, respectively. So we're essentially saying the vast majority of these races are full fields. So you almost always have horses that want to go to the lead, horses that want to sit a mid-pack trip, and horses who want to close. So you very rarely will see kind of – I mean, you'll see races where there just happens to be lone speed, but it's – they're very evenly matched races. I think I saw a statistic. It's not exact here, but it was something like 65% of our races were decided by a roughly one length, or maybe a half length it was. So it's very competitive. And weight really matters, and the pace is going to be good. It's not like, you know, in the English races where sometimes horses go out there and they just crawl, or even worse, France.
All right, so for somebody that is convinced and they, you know, maybe haven't looked at or followed Hong Kong racing before, but they want to play, do you have any pointers or any tips for them to maybe get their toe in the water without feeling particularly overwhelmed by those that obviously know the racing there a lot better than they do?
Well, with anything, Mike, you just have to kind of, like you said, dip the toe in the water, watch it a little bit. We have a really great broadcast that goes out, whether it's through your ADW or it's on one of the networks. You can get that and enjoy that, and it is an English language broadcast. But to me, the past performance information is merely a supplement to a lot of other details that we have. To me, Hong Kong racing has just about everything that the U.S. horse player says they want to have. Videos of track work, morning works, every horse that's entered, we put a video together. We splice their last 2 weeks of legitimate work. So you can watch every horse's work.
Wow.
You can look at their vet records. If you see a horse that's been off for 5 or 6 months, there's typically a reason for it. You can go in and see every day they were on the track, even if all they were doing was just cantering around, stretching the legs. If the horse went to the swimming pool, if they had an operation, it is all laid out on our website. So the past performances tell you one bit of story and kind of allows you to measure the horses up against each other, identify the pace, presence, things like that. But you can come to our website, too, and just get some more information to supplement that. And like I said, I think this is really what the U.S. horse player would love to have day in and day out. But we know it's not exactly feasible or possible to offer it in the same fashion. So it's a bit of horse racing utopia here.
All right, Pat. So I'm gonna grab a six pack tonight, order a pizza, stay up late, and get busy on this this shot 10. Who is the Chad and Todd and Javier and Mike Smith that I need to know about so that I don't let some horse get away from me?
All right, let's talk about trainers first. The reigning champion trainer is John Size, and the leading money earning trainer is John Moore. Now, trainers are only allowed to have 60 horses in their stables. They can't have any more than that. They can go lower. They can't have more than 60. So you don't have any one particular trainer dominating the standings there. So they really do spread that around. And we have a mix of expatriate trainers who come from the northern and southern hemisphere, some from Australia and some from England. And then we also have some homegrown trainers here from Hong Kong. On the jockey side, and Size and Moore are typically always near the top of the ledger. Casper Founds is another one who's been very good. Now, on the jockey side, there is clearly one leader. That's Joao Moreira. He's done some riding in the U.S. He actually rode Judy the Beauty, I think, at Churchill Downs a couple years back for Wesley Ward when he kind of did a brief American stint. But last season, we only have 800 races here in Hong Kong annually. Joe Moreira won 168 of them. The second highest winning number of wins was Zach Purton with 80. So Joe Moreira lapped the field. He had a larger margin of victory than the second place winningest jockey had total wins. So Moreira is a beast, and essentially he kind of rules the roost. When it comes to that, he's sensational. Zach Purton's phenomenal. We have kind of a legend from South Africa in Douglas White. He's a former 13-time champion here, so you'll see plenty of him. Karis Teton, who's originally from the island nation of Mauritius, rode in South Africa. He has come to Hong Kong, had a really good season last year. And we have a couple fresher names. Sam Clipperton, 22 years old, out of Australia. He's got his first three-month stint in Hong Kong starting tomorrow. Chad Schofield is another one who had a nice 30-win season. And like I mentioned, we also have quite a few local apprentices, and those weight allowances are pretty substantial.
I want to keep on the topic of weight for a second, talking about those weight allowances and the spreads and the handicaps. How big of an adjustment was it for you, Pat, to come from a world like the USA where we can debate whether or not weight is an important handicapping factor, to go to a place that clearly puts the lie to the idea that weight doesn't matter at all? How much of an adjustment was that, and what would you say to USA handicappers who still want to cling to this idea that weight is this irrelevant concept on the back of a 1,000-pound animal?
Yeah, I think it is. It's as relevant as it possibly could be in a system where there are legitimate differences in the actual handicap. That doesn't happen in the U.S. Very rarely do you get a spread of more than 5, 6, 7 pounds in a race. Whereas I'm saying here, every race you have almost exclusively at least a 20-pound gap from the top to the bottom, and it can be even more with the apprentices. I'm firmly of the belief that the American system, which I, you know, grew up in, certainly needs to adopt a handicap system. It will open the races up. People can stop worrying about what I essentially consider triple or quadruple condition races, where it's almost impossible to figure out how one horse got in, how they qualified, what type of competition did they face. If they were in a triple condition race last time, you have to go back and look at almost every horse in that previous race to figure out if these horses were in for the tag or if they were in for the claiming condition or the starter condition. And the weight differences between them are almost never indicative of their performance level. For us, you'll have horses that are making their second lifetime start in Hong Kong carrying 130 pounds. And you'll have a horse that's maybe on the down in his career. He's maybe gone on a 15-race losing streak, but he's going to get in 116 pounds because that's just the way things have gone for him lately. And suddenly you have this 14-pound gap between horses, and you're able to factor that in just like everything else. I'll also add, if a horse were to bleed here, we report that. Whether it's just blood that's found in the trachea or if it actually came out of the nostrils and we have to put them on the side for a little bit, there's full reporting of that. And it really kind of makes for an open window onto the sport that I think is very endearing to the modern day horse player.
All right, Pat, let's get down to specifics. Opening day card. Do you have any strong plays or horses that you're excited to actually put some money on?
Yeah, I've got a couple, Mike. I'll just first off mention the feature event is the third race of the day, so it's kind of early for the East Coast crowd. It'll go roughly 2 a.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. Pacific tonight. And that's the Chief Executive Cup, 1,200 meters. It's a couple horses in here that are emerging from some pretty high-class races. In fact, we even have a horse that is winless since it won the Al-Kaz Sprint on Dubai World Cup night a couple years ago. That's Amber Sky. And here goes the handicap, fellas. Carried 126 pounds last time, carries 109 pounds tonight. And it's a horse that's going to go forward under the 10-pound claimer, and they're just going to try and have to catch Amber Sky. It's an interesting race. It has some really high-quality horses. But one I want to point out from a playing standpoint, race number 5, there's two horses that are going to get a lot of attention, number 2 Superman and number 4 Team Sweet. We put all the odds up 36 hours in advance of the open of betting, so you can go right now and see what the odds are on these horses, kind of really, you know, gives you an early feel for it as opposed to a morning line. These horses are both right now roughly 5-2. But the horse I like in this race is a bit of a price at the moment. That's number 11, Super Sweet Orange. Trainer David Ferraris has this one. Right now 15-1 on the board. It's going to be drawn out in the car park. Got gate 14 is going to be coming from well off the pace. But I love what I've seen from this horse in the morning. You can go to our website and watch some of the replays. of his track work, and he's been doing it with today's jockey on board. That's local jockey Derek Lung, very competent, one of the leading local riders here in Hong Kong. Super Sweet Orange, to me, could get drawn into the race if the pace heats up. And the reason I think it's going to is we have three horses in here with some apprentices on board. All three of them have shown a propensity to go forward. I think they could heat things up on the front end. That's numbers 2, one of the favorites, Superman, 9, Regency Baby, and 12, Prompt Express. They could all go out forward and kind of battle, and it could set the table for someone like Super Sweet Orange to come pick up the pieces at a nice price. The second horse I like is in the finale on the card, race number 10. Let me just get back here in my race card. Number 12, Flying Moochie, also has an apprentice claimer here. Jack Wong will ride, carries just 108 pounds, has the gun inside barrier draw here in a field of 14. I'll tell you what, though. Flying Moochie, only in his lifetime in Hong Kong, 1-for-19. But we have these things over here called barrier trials. They're essentially practice races. You can basically, as a trainer, just kind of jump your horse out and just kind of run along with the pack or really get into him and build some conditioning. It all depends. Well, let me tell you, Flying Moochie put in a fantastic barrier trial last week. The horse that he ran second to in this barrier trial, which was on dirt, named Super Jockey, he is going to represent Hong Kong in the first Korea sprint next week. And in that barrier trial, it was the fastest over 6 furlongs in the last 8 years. Flying Moochie sat just second behind Super Jockey in that fast barrier trial. I liked what I saw, and he is a big price on the board right now. So this is race 10, number 12, Flying Moochie, and he is sitting at 27-1 right now.
Wow, wow. You got to be aware of the 14, Pikachu. I'm sure he's going to get overbet because of his name, huh?
Every time. Every time.
Hey, Pat, I got an idea. Look, so if this horse, the Sweet Orange horse, if that horse wins, I'm going to email you my birthday, my known traveler number, and then you just book the ticket so we can come out to Hong Kong and hang out. I've heard it's an unbelievable party, and I've been known to enjoy a party or two. So if Sweet Orange, the Sweet Orange horse, if he crosses the wire first, then I'll shoot you an email with all my information.
Look forward to doing it.
That's great stuff. It does sound like an amazing place to visit. What, for a fan interested in making the trip over there, Pat, what would you recommend in all seriousness, resources for them to try to, an American racing fan, to do a Hong Kong specific trip?
Well, it's very straightforward. You don't have to be coming to Hong Kong just to come here and experience our racing. It's a great city, but there's so many other great spots around. So if anyone's taking a trip to Asia, if you're going to Japan, it's about 4 hours from Japan, 4 hours from Korea. Thailand's a couple hours away, Singapore, Vietnam. So if you're coming over here to this part of the world, have a stopover in Hong Kong for a couple days and make sure it's a time when we're racing, either on the weekends out at Sha Tin or the middle of the week at Happy Valley. Happy Valley Wednesday nights, it's the place to be in Hong Kong. Think of it this way. On TripAdvisor, it's one of like the top 10 things to do in Hong Kong. And it's open. Happy Valley Racecourse is essentially open 4 hours once a week for 38 weeks out of the year. And it's a top 10 tourist attraction in the city. It's like if you dropped a race course in the middle of Central Park and everybody came out of the office buildings and pitched up for a night of racing. We have 20,000 people on Wednesday nights. They're drinking beer in the beer garden, having fun, betting the horses, and just having a great time. So, look, it's very easy. Reach out to me on Twitter, Pat Cummings HK, and I'll make sure that you have all the information you need to. Our website has a plethora of it. We're actually bolstering some of our tourist information on there. Oh, and by the way, guys, it's really cheap. You just want to walk in, 10 Hong Kong dollars, roughly $1.25 US to walk in, and some of the cheapest beer in the city on Wednesday nights.
All right, you've convinced
I'm sold.
Me. Yeah. now, if only it were cheap to get over there. So Pat, why don't you talk a little bit about the race calendar? You mentioned that 36 weeks out of the year. How long does this meet go? And if somebody's trying to make it work for them, what are the times of years that they want to focus on or maybe try and avoid?
Well, the biggest time of the year for us is really in December. So we're talking before Christmas. The biggest meeting of the year, 83 million Hong Kong dollars. The Hong Kong International Race is sponsored by Longines. It's a fantastic event. That's the one Jonathan was referencing earlier. Four races out of the 10 are the Group 1 Longines Hong Kong Vase, Sprint, Mile, and Cup. And it's actually the world's richest races on grass at more or less 6 furlongs, 8 furlongs, and 10 furlongs. That's the best day of the year to come. We'll have 80,000 people on track, international horses from all over the place. Between the four races, we normally have about 30 from overseas and 30 from Hong Kong to really kind of spice things up. And earlier that week, on the Wednesday, December 7th, we have the Longines International Jockey Championship. Jocks from all over the world come in. It's actually the world's richest jockey challenge. We have about 500,000 Hong Kong dollars on offer there for the winners. Now, a couple other big days on our card, Sunday, March 19th. It's essentially the biggest domestic race of the year. That's the Hong Kong Derby. Our Derby, if you will, is open to four-year-olds only. Every horse that runs in Hong Kong is imported. So they simply cannot all just pitch up and be ready to go as three-year-olds. Because of the importation process, some quarantine, et cetera, we give them until their four-year-old season. But it's almost a little more than $2.5 million. It's a big race. The BMW Hong Kong Derby this year is Sunday, March 19th. And then we have two other major international weekends of racing. One is Sunday, April 30th. The other is the day after the Kentucky Derby. So I think you guys will probably have something else to do. But the Champions Mile and Chairman Sprint Prize. But look, again, there is no bad day to come to Hong Kong for racing because on average we have roughly between the two race courses about 24,000 a day at Sha Tin and about 20,000, 19,000 at Happy Valley. So you're going to feel like you're at a big day whether or not there's a big race on or not.
Amazing. We've seen in recent years a little bit of cross-pollination between the Hong Kong scene and the Breeders' Cup with Rich Tapestry the other year. Put your futurist hat on for a second, Pat. What do you see as being coming in the next few years? Will we see more horses that we're familiar with from Hong Kong coming here and vice versa?
Well, when we get a really decent dirt horse, there are no dirt stakes races here in Hong Kong. Now, even though we have the world's richest prize money per race, and it's still good, you can basically out-handicap yourself if you get so proficient on dirt that you need to look elsewhere. And that's the case we have with one horse right now, Gun Pit. He ran second in the Maktoum Challenge in Dubai and then caught a bit of a bad trip in the World Cup. He was bottled up, and he may have run his first race first up on Super Saturday there, and he ran out the back in the World Cup. But he's aiming right now for the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. He's undefeated on dirt at Sha Tin. He's a Group 1 placed horse on dirt in Dubai, and they're aiming to run in the Dirt Mile for the Breeders' Cup. But you don't get many turf horses from here to run out to somewhere else because there are so many big races here. And every horse in Hong Kong is owned by a member of the jockey club. So we have 24,000 members, but only about 3,000 or so have an interest in a horse through syndication or direct ownership. So, you know, a lot of people really care about winning races here. So while we do have some that travel on occasion, the majority of them tend to stay at home. So I think if you're going to see us run abroad, you'll see it happen in a turf race. It happened in Dubai a couple of years ago. We tend to send a string of 6 or 8. That's a good time in the season for our horses to travel. Breeders' Cup comes a month and a half before the Hong Kong International Races. So the type of horse that would go there would probably be a dirt horse. And we saw Rich Tapestry win the Santa Anita Sprint Championship, and then things didn't really go all that well, and he caught a bit of a shuffle in the Breeders' Cup Sprint. So maybe you'll see some more dirt horses from us in the future for the big one.
Sounds great. Absolute last question. Pat, would you be willing in the near future to join us on a webinar specifically about all this stuff and the availability of Hong Kong racing to USA players?
Yeah, happily do it, Pete. Part of this relationship is to get people more familiar with what's going on. And like we said at the beginning, you have to dip your toes in and get a start somewhere. Watching the racing, catching the replays. Look, I almost look back to when I was a kid to figure out how no one was teaching me how to read the form. So I would go back, I would get a copy of the form, and then I would go back and look at the results page the next day, see who the winners were, and go back to their form and try and figure out what was it that happened. Why did this horse win this race? And that was without even seeing the replay. So the world's a little bit different now, and there's plenty of opportunities to have the full sensory experience when it comes to information and video, and we offer it. And it's really exciting. It's a growing business for us to have the commingled product.
Well, that's great stuff, and we thank you for taking time today. I want to thank Jonathan Kinchin, Mike Hogan, Pat Cummings, of course, for taking time on the show today. Most of all, I want to thank all of you for listening and downloading the DRF Players podcast. We'll be back with another show, I May Cry, on Tuesday. Until then, may you win all your photos.